You are listening to Season 2 of the Humans of AI Stories Not Stats podcast, where Devi Parikh and Dhruv Patra talk to AI researchers to try and understand who they are as people, what their life is like, what they think about, what they're insecure about, and what they get really excited about. Questions that reveal the stories of their day-to-day life. In this episode, Dhruv talks with Akshara Rai, who is a research scientist at Facebook AI Research. She talks about the importance of writing down your thoughts to get clarity, pushing things to the last minute for efficiency, watching movies at 2x speed, her appreciation for generosity and kindness, and lots more. For more information about the podcast and the episodes, you can log on to www.humanstories.ai. And yeah, let's get right into the episode.
Okay. Akshara Rai, welcome to Humans of AI. Thank you for doing this.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Okay. So, as you know, this is being recorded. I have a sequence of questions for you. Some are light and may not require much thought. Others may require a bit more consideration, in which case, feel free to pause, take your time to think. If you want to skip any question, we can do that. But when in doubt, if you can err on the side of being open, vulnerable, transparent, I think we would appreciate it. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay, so what were you doing right before this call?
Oh, I was writing you an email. You and a couple of other, I was writing an email to some collaborators about a meeting I had this morning.
Mm. And what's your daily routine like?
I wake up in the morning, like most people, and then I mostly just come and sit here on this table. Well, I make breakfast, depending on whether I have an early morning meeting or not. So sometimes if the meeting is like within 15 minutes of waking up, then I just show up here like this morning. But usually I have some time and then I make breakfast and eat breakfast and then come here and then stay here, then make lunch, have lunch. Sometimes, have lunch here as well. And then, in the evening, when the day is over, then I go out for a walk with my husband or like go for a workout, a run or something. And then after that, read a book, eat some dinner, and fall asleep.
And what's the favorite part of your day?
I think it's... So there's two parts of my day which are my favorite, sorry. So first part of my day is actually sometimes I take an hour during lunchtime when I like cook lunch and eat it. And like I usually listen to an audiobook while doing this. And I really enjoy doing that. That you're listening to a book while cooking or next, taking some time to cook and eating. That's a lot. I really enjoy that piece. That 1 hour of peace. And then the other part and that's really good is in the evening when I usually work out, I come back and shower and then I take a bath. So, fill up the bathtub. And I started doing this so that my muscles don't get sore. But now I actually really look forward to that. Sometimes I go for a workout because afterwards I'll get to come back and sit in the bath. So, those are the two favorite parts.
Out of curiosity, what are you reading / listening to right now?
So I'm always because I'm listening and reading, there are usually multiple books that I'm reading at the same time. So recently I was reading a book called When Breath Becomes Air. I think I finished it last week. It's a very philosophical book about a neurosurgeon who gets diagnosed with cancer, and it's his transition from being a doctor to being a patient, which is very interesting. And coincidentally, a book that I'm listening to is called Cutting for Stone, which is also about a neurosurgeon, but not related to cancer. But those are the two books. One is nonfiction and one is fiction.
And what is the least favorite part of your day?
I feel like there's not one, I don't know. I feel like if I do identify something as something I don't enjoy, I usually try to cut it out so I don't actually think I have a part of my day, which is the least favorite part of my day. you know, sometimes something is good and sometimes something else is good, sort of. Sorry, pop-out answer.
I mean, I could press you by saying, surely mathematically it exists, but I think we get the point.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's just not one thing that's the least favorite part of my day. You know, different days, different things are the least favorite part of my day. Yeah. That makes sense.
Do you set an alarm in the morning?
Yes, every morning. Do you want to know when? I'm embarrassed by it.
Okay. Sure, if you
8:15.
Okay, that's pretty precise. And do you end up snoozing it?
Yes. So this is actually a funny story. I have an 8:15 alarm and my husband has an 8:30 alarm. And I always have an 8:15 alarm that I snooze twice, and then his alarm rings, and then I wake up and his alarm rings basically. So yeah, I should probably stop my alarm and think about it. But yeah, I do have an alarm that I snooze. Sorry, there's a big floor out there.
It's fine. Are you a planner or do you operate largely on gut feeling, going with the flow?
Yeah, when you said, are you a planner, right? You know, of course, immediately thought of
robotics,
motion planners, and so on. I don't think I'm a planner, but I'm trying to grow into one, kind of. I think after talking to people, I realized that there's some disadvantages to not having at least long-term plan to life. Though also, you know, what's the point of planning, because everything is so uncertain and so on. But, but I'm trying to grow into a planner. I'm not a planner, you know.
Do you struggle with procrastination?
You know, yeah, for sure. But honestly, who doesn't? Are there people who don't?
Yeah, they exist. They exist. I've met them.
Oh, I thought it was a myth. I see.
They're not very representative, but they exist.
I see. Huh. No, I mean, I struggle with procrastination. I think I'm not as bad as some people. So my trick usually is to, you know, find something that is even more pressing than the thing that I'm trying to procrastinate, right? And then procrastinate the other thing by doing the thing that you needed to do in the first place.
That's pretty efficient.
Yeah, it doesn't work, but yeah. But yeah, I'm a procrastinator.
And do you struggle with time management?
What's wrong with time management? I don't think so. I think I do fine time management wise. Yeah, I think I usually kind of try to think what are the most important priorities of the day every morning and then work on it. So, you know, some days are better than others again. Like, I'm not like Devi or something crazy great at time management, but I think at the end of the day I usually feel like I did what I wanted to do most days.
And are you competitive, Akshara?
See, all of these questions, I feel like there's no black and white answer.
Which is fine. You can respond with a contextual explanation and an intermediate response.
Yeah. But I feel bad because I feel like I'm copping out on all the questions so far. But I think I'm not competitive. I would say that, you know, there are times when I do, I guess, more than competitive, I have the habit of comparing myself to other people. And like that is a bad habit basically, which I want to overcome. So yeah, I would say not so much competitive as kind of insecure with regards to other people sometimes. Makes sense.
Yeah. Is there a rejection or a failure that hurt particularly bad?
I'm just gonna I mean, every rejection hurts, I suppose. I think, yeah, I feel like, yeah, I think for me, it's very hard to not take a rejection personally. So, and for some reason, I can only think of paper rejections right now, which has been, you know, as you submit more papers get rejected, and it's kind of painful every time that happens, because, you know, you put in all this work and then you feel like it was not a fair judgment, right? So any particular rejection? Let me think about that. Yeah, sorry, no, I can't think of anything that wasn't particular. Yeah, I just think that every rejection hurts a bit, and then I kind of try to think of it as not take it personal.
That's fine. How about the converse of that? Is there a particular success or an achievement that felt particularly good?
Yeah, I guess, I think it was some time ago, but like getting into Facebook ad research was high point at the time that, you know, ooh, happened. Was not expecting it, but yeah, was pleasantly surprised. I think one thing which
and then you got there and looked around and they're like, oh, these bumps, yeah. Sure.
No, I think the bumps were the reason why I was thinking I wouldn't get in, you know. So. And I think it ties back to like some sort of an insecurity or imposter syndrome or sort of a thing. So yeah, was definitely felt really good to get into FAIR. I think one thing which I really like is kind of like working with you and other collaborators who seem to enjoy working with me. So, you know, for example, if at the end of my half we write each other feedback and I get to hear from people that they actually enjoyed the project that we worked on together. I think that always feels really nice. And that's kind of like the reason why we do anything or something like that.
What is one thing that you are worse at than people around you?
Yeah, so many things, right? So, I think one thing, I guess, do you mean in a personal way or in a professional way?
Either sphere. I think it's really up to you to decide a sphere, and whatever comes to mind, for example, would be fine.
So I think my husband is very precise as a person. So, you know, like he cooks and he bakes, and when he bakes, he's like measuring things to the right gram and so on. And I don't have the patience for that. You know Indian cooking, right? You stir it till it looks right. That's how I cook. So definitely like this precision of, in general, like not just cooking, but, you know, cleaning. I clean something and then he goes and cleans it again because it was not clean enough the first time. And I'm not very precise, I think, for sure.
Yeah. I had to actually learn a degree of precision in my cooking because I realized that my mental models of ingredients are highly linear. Like I just go A good, B good, A plus B good, like 2A better, like 3A even better. Like, and they're clearly wrong, because if you keep doing that, you very quickly end up in things being done. So I have to stick to measurements because of that.
Interesting. Yeah, I also started measuring food somewhat recently, and I did realize there was a increase in quality of my cooking. So now I also try to measure some, but not like him. He's crazy.
What would you say is your biggest strength?
Biggest strength. I think I can work a lot if I need to without losing efficiency too much. So like closer to deadlines, I'm like, I can still push 12-hour days consistently. And then, you know, of course, afterwards, take a week off or something. But yeah, I think I have a lot of perseverance. I guess that's the term I would say that I can, and I don't give up easily on certain things.
Hmm. That's pretty cool. What is a favorite tool or trick or hack that you think makes your life more convenient or efficient or fun?
Yeah, this was a good question. I heard it in the original Humans of AI, and I like listening to the answers. So, I actually thought about this question, and I think, so the one hack that I think always works, maybe I already said that earlier in this one, but if there's something I don't want to do, but I have to do it, what I kind of try to do is, you know, basically, let's say if I have to write up feedback or something at the end of the half, which is not so much fun, but it's something that I have to do, I kind of leave it till the last minute, but I give it like enough time. So I give it 12 hours, which is how much I know I need to write it properly without procrastinating and, you know, looking at the internet. And then I leave it to the last minute so that I'm highly efficient when I am doing it because I'm pressed against the deadline. And then I also tell myself, if I finish it early, I get 3 hours off. Woo. So yeah, that's a hack, that if there's something I don't want to do, I leave it to the last minute.
if you do, this is the quote, right? If you do everything in the last minute, it only takes a minute.
Exactly.
I see. And do you find you're also able to invent deadlines for yourself to cram things up against, or does it have to be externally forced?
It has to be externally forced.
Hmm.
Otherwise, I'll start looking at the internet and go, ooh, there's this cool video. Yeah, like a cat.
How do you make difficult decisions? Are there certain lines of thinking or frameworks? Do you end up making pros and cons lists? How do you approach difficult decisions?
It's a good question. For me, difficult decisions, I need to write them down. So I kind of write a diary, and it's not so organized as a pros and cons list. It usually starts out as a crazy jumble of things in my head.
Mm.
And then as I go down, I'm like talking myself down and thinking of, okay, what the options are and what the, different situations are. And then what is the best action to take here? And then, once I have narrowed it down to a couple of actions that I could take, I always talk to my husband and, you know, bounce them off of him to get the sanity check on what makes sense here, for sure.
Do you have an internal monologue? Can you talk to yourself in your head?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely talk to myself a lot, but not necessarily in my head.
Also, okay, out loud.
Yeah.
Okay, you have an external monologue.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and in what language is this?
That's a good one. I think that depends on who I was talking to last. So I have a tough time switching languages. So if I have to talk to my parents, which I talk in Hindi to them, afterwards I continue thinking in Hindi for some time. And sometimes I will talk to my husband in Hindi, who doesn't speak Hindi, afterwards. And then, you know, then I will switch to English, and then everything will stick in English for some time. But it's kind of, dependent on who I talk to last.
Interesting. There are subcultures, and which are, some of them are even popular in India, where people code switch, so switch between languages in the middle of a sentence. You found that you've never done that?
Yeah, no, I actually have a tough time switching between languages. I have noticed this as compared to other people. It's like my brain switches modes, and then it's just talking and thinking in that mode, and then it goes to the other mode and thinks in that mode, sort of. I think I always go back to English eventually at this point. But if I had just recently talked to people in Hindi, then I would probably think in Hindi for some time.
And are you a visual thinker? Do you have symbols, pictures, moving pictures, scenarios in your head? No maps, no plans happening on maps,
no
search trees.
I hate maps. No. I mean, if you showed me a map, I would probably close my eyes and think without it. Just saying. No, I don't think I think visually. I think I just think.
I see. And what do you tend to think about when you're not actively trying to think about something? What goes on the back burner?
Again, can be in the front burner too, but...
Right.
What do I think about? Yeah, I think it's whatever is on my... Like, it's not one thing. If I'm reading a book, then sometimes it's, like, the book that I think about. If I'm, like, working on a paper and it's kind of on my mind what the story should be, then I would think about that. If I had some, like, you know, involved discussion with someone, then I would think about, you know, the discussion, what I said, what they said, and so on. Yeah, maybe after this I would think about all the stupid things that I said here, most likely, but yeah. Yeah, it depends on what's going on at the time.
How do you recharge or take a break?
So that's actually a bit tough for me, I think. I find it very hard to, especially with COVID, right? It's kind of hard to not, because we're all at home, to not actually come to my computer. Yeah, but I try to make an effort to like read books and so on so that I am not spending so much time thinking about work or working on things. Yeah. Otherwise, usually I would like to go on vacation, you know, before quarantine and stay at home. I would have liked to go on vacation somewhere without my laptop and enjoy time like that.
Are you happy with the number of close friends you have?
I'm happy with the number of close friends I have. One of my closest friend is pretty sick, so I'm pretty worried about that. But otherwise, yeah, I'm happy with the number of close friends I have. Yeah. I hope it keeps increasing, though.
Yeah. What are you insecure about?
I think I am usually insecure about, you know, work and how I compare to other people in similar parts of their career. If I'm smart enough or my research is good enough or compelling enough or not. But, you know, I also try to tell myself to not question everything like that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you're succeeding at calming yourself?
I think there's good days and bad days. Again, as with everything, I guess.
Do you think you're average, above average, or below average happy compared to the people around you? And this could be in any sphere. Work or personal.
You know, I want to say above average, but then I think everyone probably says above average, but then, you know, there's, you know, what's with the average, right? That should be the average. I think if this was a Gaussian, then slightly to the right of the mean, but most likely to the mean. I think I'm to the right, but I'm probably at the mean. But yeah.
And right being more happy.
I'm sorry?
And right being more happy.
Yes,
yeah.
Right being more happy.
Okay. What is something surprising about you? Something that the rest of us may not guess?
It's a tough one. Why is something surprising about me? Man, it's kind of sad. I can't think of anything surprising about me.
Well, it's either that or it could be because, you know, your model of whoever is finding this surprising is that, you know, they understand you enough that they're They shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of, yeah, someone who knows me, what's surprising for them?
Yeah, maybe someone who doesn't quite know you personally. Maybe they know you as, you know, a researcher at FAIR, a PhD from, like, someone who knows you professionally. What would they be surprised about?
Well, I talk a lot. You don't... Is that not surprising? It's not.
I don't think you talk a lot, like...
Okay. Let me think, sorry. What is surprising about me? Sleep 10 hours a day.
Okay, that would put you in an outlier situation. I think most Americans get seven-ish, like, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, I sleep like 9 to 10 hours a day.
Good for you. I'm sure there's like doctors that are feeling good about at least someone following that advice.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, if I have a busy day and like I'm eating dinner and I'm going to bed now, don't care about anything else. Yeah, so I do sleep. I also watch all movies at 2x, 1.5x to 2x. That's how I watch the old Humans of AI videos.
Okay, everything, all movies, all, everything that you typically get.
Well, if I watch it with my husband, he doesn't let me watch it at 1.5x. But yes, if I'm watching anything by myself, I watch it sped up. Yeah.
Okay. For situations where you're watching someone who you may then ultimately meet, do you just find them to be annoyingly slow in real time?
Yeah, this used to happen in the past. So I was watching a lot of movies at 1.5x in undergrad to save time. And then I would go for food, like in the cafeteria. And I'm like, oh God, why is everyone so slow? Move faster. Yes.
Okay. And what is something about the world that surprises you? Besides, obviously, the fact that it doesn't move as fast.
1.5x, yeah. What surprises me? You know, anything out of the expectation surprises me.
Okay, yeah, I think beyond the definition of surprise.
I think people surprise me a lot. So I think it's this thing in my mind, which I don't like about myself, but basically I have these models for people. And I am like updating these models, but I always have models. And if people act outside of that model, which, you know, happens every now and then, I get very surprised by those actions. Again.
Yeah, I think you just like in more words defined the definition of surprise again, except you, this time you took the pains to define P of X as well. Okay. Do you find your models of people violated frequently?
I mean, yeah, more frequent than you would think, like once a week or something. Something happens and I'm like, I don't expect that person to do that.
Okay. So that is surprising. So yeah. The world surprises you because they just keep violating your models of...
Yeah. I think yeah, nobody fits in models. That's like the robotics agenda, right?
Yeah. I think I then know the answer to the next question I'm about to ask, which is, what do you wish your brain was better at doing?
Well, man, not the models. I'm fine with those.
I see. It just gives the world a sense of wonderment. Like,
I don't know. It's like a rainbow every now and then. No, what I think my brain was better at doing. Yeah, separating work from personal life, I think. If I could like take both, but if I'm having trouble personal life, not let it spill over to my professional, you know, the quality of my work and so on, versus the other way, that if I'm having conflicts at work. I'm stressed because of different things at work. It doesn't flow over to my personal life as well. I wish I could do that better.
What do you strongly suspect but have no proof of?
Strongly suspect. Again, so many things. I don't know. I think I'm such a kind of scientific person that I don't actually have such a belief, because if I do think, I would try to go out and look for evidence for it. And if I don't find evidence, I would not like very strongly believe in it. Yeah. I think one of the things is that people in, for example, robotics are always saying that, you know, I want to do this in humans, but I just think one of the things is that maybe that humans have no idea what they're doing. I usually suspect that, but, you know, everyone is doing everything this night in a completely different way. Like, you know, people are trying to imitate muscles and so on, and I wonder if everyone's muscles activations are like actually different, and they're all individually learned unique controllers, and it's such a high dimensional thing that it reduces to the same movement, but, you know, it's actually different on the minute level. And then, you know, I shouldn't be trying to learn the minute things that humans are doing, because there's no solution, but, you know.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Okay.
What is something that you have changed your mind about?
I think one of the things I used to think, again, I mean, again, related to work, I'm sorry, but one of the things that I, as a roboticist, I was very convinced about was kind of like, I have to see hardware experiments for to believe like a paper is has any value to it. And, you know, after talking to you and a lot of other people, I have changed my mind about that. I don't think there's value to robotics hardware experiments in isolation. Like, there has to be more than one hardware experiment to actually add value. And two, I am starting to see the value in doing actually larger scale simulation studies, which can give us more, you know, well-defined answers than single hardware experiments. I mean, I still understand the people who say that, oh, but, you know, what simulation doesn't transfer and so on, but I think it's something I'm changing my mind, and I'm hoping most of robotics field at some point would also see the value on the other side of this.
Awesome. You have no idea how happy I am with that answer.
Well, congratulations to you, right? But that's something I definitely have learned since working with you and a lot of other folks at FAIR.
Welcome to the dark side.
See, I'm not saying that simulations are the answer. Don't misquote me right now.
It is the hallmark of a true roboticist that they feel that their reputation is on the line if they are seen in the wrong company of people doing simulation.
Well, I think that's the hallmark of every academician, academic, not just roboticist. But yeah, my husband and I, when we are throwing insults at each other, we say, "You are a simulation person."
I see. Yeah, talk about separating work from okay. What is a bad habit you're working on overcoming?
Bad habit I'm working on overcoming. I think I'm trying to, work out more and maintain a healthier lifestyle. When work from home started, I had a really bad eating schedule. I think I was overeating a lot and not eating like regular times of the day and stuff. So I've been trying to make, overall my lifestyle healthier.
And what are you addicted to?
What am I addicted to? Like if I'm watching a TV show, which is actually engrossing, I can get a bit like, the whole weekend went by with just watching things one after the other. But right now actually nothing in particular that is very addictive. I try to keep it that way because I feel like if I do get addicted to something, it takes a lot of time out of things that I would rather do instead.
How do you imagine your retirement?
Oh, retirement. So I think it's going to be the same as how it is right now. Maybe with more independence to do. No, I already have full independence to do what I want to do. Like usually people think that, I would have more independence to do what I want to do. But I feel like, I already have plenty of independence in that regard. So maybe less work, definitely less insecurity for me, because, starting out right now, I imagine by the time I'm retired, I'm much more established and feeling more happy where I am, more secure where I am.
Any particular location? Any particular
location? I would like a house on top of a hill looking over a body of water. It's a very particular idea, not in the Bay Area, because could not afford that. I will have to work till I'm 80 to be able to afford a house like that in the Bay Area, but I would like a house covered in the woods. I want like a house in the woods, which is like on an elevated area overlooking something nice.
And are you imagining an age?
Not right now, maybe 60, 65, but not particularly.
Do you think about the future much on a 5 to 10 year horizon?
5 to 10 year horizon. I'm trying to think about it more in work now. Also in a personal sense, I'm trying to think a bit about what I want in the next 5 years in our set phase of my life, I think. Plan about it. So a bit recently.
And on a shorter time horizon, when do you think the world will open back up after COVID?
Hey, in California, we're getting vaccines from April 15th for everybody. So hopefully, later this year, September, hopefully.
Okay, that's a pretty verifiable and falsifiable prediction.
Mm-hmm. You think it'll be falsified?
Maybe. There's certainly a possibility that some of the variants that are rising right now, that we may get stuck in another cycle of vaccination because they made vaccination.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if they will shut us down again for booster shots on our vaccines or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping not.
Yeah, maybe the FDA approvals are already in place and that you don't need approvals for the second round, so that would be faster.
Yeah, I'm hoping that.
Do you think there's a point to life and our existence?
Oh yeah, this question. I actually had a very long discussion about it at some point after watching one of the episodes. It's one of those questions that there's no way to know, right? It's very dissatisfying. So I guess my answer is there's no way to know.
Do you think that it's unknowable?
I guess, yeah, if I say it's unknowable, does it mean I... So yes, I want the answer to be yes, there is a meaning to life. I want there to be a meaning to my existence, to everybody's existence. But I think recently I've started questioning everything, and in that way I'm not sure right now. But
why?
I don't know what the meaning is. If there is a meaning, I don't know what it is, but I wish, I hope there is a meaning.
And why do you want there to be a meaning in all of our lives?
Well, I just think there's so much pain and suffering. I mean, there's happy parts, but then there's also, I wish that there was a reason why it all happens. And that's why I would wish that there's a meaning and reason why everything happens, yeah.
And what do you find meaning in?
I think for me, yeah, it's people. It's working with people, it's being with people, which has, you know, kind of been missing because of COVID. But yeah, I think meaning for me only comes from interactions, from person to person, you know, whatever we have to give to each other.
Even more profound question. Pineapple on pizza.
Oh, both, no? And, you know, add in, like, also a bunch of other stuff, like olives and onions and tomatoes and basil. Yeah.
what are we making here? Like, pineapple and olives and onions?
Yeah, why not? Yes, I made pizza like that.
Nice. This is back to the, this is not even a measurement problem. This is just, there is no recipe here.
Just more the merrier.
Yeah, I think your mental models are also linear. You're just adding things that may individually be fine, but cumulatively not fine.
Oh no, I like this pizza. Thank you very much.
Okay, so your mental models are linear and they are right, damn it.
Exactly. Don't tell me what I want.
Okay. Fine. I think you win that round. Just how do you decide what to work on?
I think it's a combination of two things for me. One definitely is like collaborators. So I think I'm more attracted to having good collaborators than being super tied to a particular research direction, because I think the part of research that I enjoy more than the topic itself is the people I'm working with. And the other thing is, I think I am always looking to learn more things. So kind of try to think of, you know, what is something I don't know anything about, and maybe it was computer vision, and then I decided, so let's work on a project that involves this so that I can learn more about it while I'm working on this project.
And how do you capture and keep track of ideas?
How do I capture and keep track of ideas? So I have this note in which I have a lot of ideas, which I have never gone back to. But yeah, if I get a random idea out of nowhere, I usually write it down in a Google note. But other than that, I think either I start working on a project, try to incorporate this idea. So if it seems like it's relatable to any of the projects, I try to incorporate it into project, maybe write an overleaf document, which kind of describes what I have in mind. And then try to, you know, add it to a project. Otherwise, yeah, if it's completely out of the blue, then I just write it in my note.
And you don't go back to that note ever? look at it.
There's like 10 things there. One more.
Maybe it's just serving as a device where you solidify your ideas during the process of writing. It's just...
Let's call it that. Yeah, thanks.
Sure. What are some traits common to some of the best collaborators or colleagues that you've worked with?
So yeah, I also thought about this question when I first heard it. And I think the answer for me is kind of, overall, it's a bit of generosity. I want my collaborators and my colleagues to be like generous in time. So, you know, if I have to take a step back because of some issues, they are like willing to spend more time than they had initially promised, maybe. Generous in credit, right? So let's not fight for who did what. Let's be generous about this. Yeah, and like in general, with feedback, everything, I just want people to be, I guess, kind and generous to others. Yeah.
And are you able to spot these traits early?
I think the people that I end up working with long term usually have this in common. But I think it's pretty hard to spot it, from the start for me.
Describe something that made you smile today.
Oh yeah, this was fun. Yeah, I've been laughing for a while. This was fun. The other thing that was very funny was, I had a funny conversation with Joanne, a PhD student who I work with today, and that we were supposed to have a meeting, and she was confused that we didn't have a meeting because I had made a meeting, but I hadn't added her to the meeting. But it was a meeting with me and her, so it was very confusing. Yeah, that was also fun.
So you had an invite with just you on it?
Yes. And then I was in the meeting and I was like, Joanne, where are you?
Yeah. Yet I don't think we've solved the telepathy problem to that extent.
No. But, yeah. John and I have a really good communication thing going, but this one she didn't catch on.
Yeah, that sounds like something that she should work on. What is some of the best advice that you've gotten or given?
I think one of the advice that Devi gave me at some point, which was very helpful, was to kind of, like I said, start making a plan about what I want. So when I started at Fair, I don't know, I mean, this is probably everywhere, but because, as I said, I was also insecure and so on, I would often be like looking for more resources, headcount, and, people to work with. Even if I didn't necessarily need these things, like I was asking for more robots when I didn't necessarily need more robots. I was asking for, and I had a couple of such incidents. And in the moment, it's very hard to know when you're asking for something, if it's because, other people have it and that's why you want it, or because you want it because you actually need it. Devi actually said, what helps here is actually having a plan and seeing that how does this fit in my plan? Do I actually need this one or plan and so on? So I think this was really good advice for me. And since then, I've been trying to follow on it now more officially, and in the beginning, just less officially. Yeah.
Interesting. Why did you agree to do this interview with me?
Why did you ask me to do the interview with you?
I asked you because I thought you'd have, you have interesting thoughts. I was curious about hearing your perspective on some of these things. And frankly, I had remembered the 1.5 and 2x thing. That was your intro even at Fair. So I knew that there's a bunch of like surprising, quirky, interesting things about you that might be fun.
Yeah, Okay. I decided to do the interview because when I saw your interview, you know, my reaction was, man, I thought I knew the guy. But I saw it and I was like, wait, he was in the rock band? So, you know, I thought it would be fun to do the interview because, yeah, it would be great to tell you more about myself. And maybe you got surprised about what a person I am as well.
Is it, those were all the questions that I have. Is there anything that we didn't get to about you or an aspect of your life that you think it's worth talking about?
No, this was great. Thank you so much for doing it. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for doing this. All right.